This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Lots of new movies are opening for the holidays. Our film critic John Powers has seen them all, so we invited him to talk about them and give us his recommendations. I think perhaps the most advertised movie of the season is Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman story starring Jim Carrey. What'd you think of it?
Well, actually, I had two thoughts about Man on the Moon. The first is it's an extraordinarily shallow film. It's a film that's supposed to be a biopic of the comedian Andy Kaufman. And what you learn about his life is virtually nothing. And the film's insight into his life is almost completely worthless. I mean, it's hard to imagine a film about somebody's life that would reveal less about the life than Man on the Moon. If you look at it as a biographical film, it's a failure. If you look at it as a kind of weird concert film, it's a great success. Jim Carrey impersonates Kaufman with uncanny brilliance. And what you get is a version of Andy Kaufman's greatest hits. So if, like me, you'd been driven crazy years ago during the months and months and months that Andy Kaufman spent doing his wrestling shtick, what's funny is in this film, that shtick now takes 15 minutes, and it really seems funny. So if you don't go expecting to learn anything about Andy Kaufman, you may well have a good time, and you'll see a really good performance by Jim Carrey. If you expect more than that, you'll probably be disappointed.
What did you think of Milos Forman's direction?
Actually, I thought the direction was energetic, but sort of sloppy in TV style, really. I expected something a little grander. And it's quite possible that he directed in this way because Kaufman was essentially a television phenomenon. So that to not do a big, bombastic, Amadeus-style direction is probably a conscious choice on his part. I think there's nothing particularly special about the directing. I think almost all of it goes back to the fact that Kaufman was funny and that Carrey's very good as Kaufman. The film doesn't even ask any of the essential questions you might ask. For instance, you know, was what Kaufman did really interesting, or was it just a sort of higher form of gotcha? Which is to say that there are times when watching this film you think of that he's rather like one of those conceptual artists from the 70s and 80s whose work was essentially empty but produced a very impressive immediate effect. And that would be a question a film might address. For instance, how does Andy Kaufman compare to Richard Pryor, whose work was about a whole bunch of other stuff? But the film is so shallow, it never gets into anything like that.
John, for people who expect to see just one movie during the holidays, what's your best recommendation?
I think the best of the holiday films is The Talented Mr. Ripley. I've seen all of them, and the one that surprised me the most and seemed to me most to offer the kinds of things that I want from a holiday film was that film. I mean, one of the strange things about Christmas and the Hanukkah season, Terry, is that you get all these films that don't seem very appealing. You know, there are two prison movies that are 2 hours and 45 minutes and 3 hours long. There are two grim literary adaptations. So you get to see Irish drunks and Angela's Ashes, and you get to see Japanese people sent to internment camps and snow falling on cedars. And then you have The Talented Mr. Ripley, where you have this unbelievably good-looking cast involved in a good story written by Patricia Highsmith, where they're wandering through Italy. And you think, this is the film I want to see. I want to see the attractive people doing cool things in a place I can't get to. It's the one film that's sort of an old-style Hollywood film, and I liked it enormously.
Is it faithful to the novel, and do you care?
Yes, it is in many ways faithful to the novel. I think it plays up the homosexual side of the hero a little bit more than the book did. It's very clear in the book, but the film, because it now has a freedom that no one really had in dealing with these things back in the 50s, puts the homosexual issue a little bit more to the forefront. But what's really wonderful about the movie is the way that it captures, I think, a very zeitgeisty thing, which is the envy that ordinary people feel when they look and see the people around them who seem to be rich and glamorous and living lives so much more rich and expressive than their own. I mean, there's a way in which Tom Ripley, who's the hero of the film, is a quintessential American figure, the person who wants to create himself as somebody else, and that somebody else is richer and more glamorous than he is.
Kind of what people try to do when they see Matt Damon.
Yes, well, I think one of the funny things is when you see Matt Damon in this film, is he plays the not very famous, not very important Tom Ripley, who meets a rich millionaire son named Dickie, played by Jude Law. And the funny thing about it is that Damon, who's on the cover of all sorts of magazines for being such a good-looking guy, when you put him next to Jude Law, who's simply gorgeous, Matt Damon looks like some peasant you've pulled out of a cornfield. And what's wonderful about the film is to watch this all-American Matt Damon figure suddenly look a bit like an awkward bumpkin next to this sleek English actor who does a brilliant job playing an American, who wears these wonderful shirts that I wanted to buy so badly that I was actually taken out of my thoughts about the film for a moment to think, where could you buy those shirts?
And did you like Matt Damon's performance? Do you think that this shows something about him that we haven't seen before?
Not really. I think it's a good performance, and I think that for the film to be great, and I think it's not a great film, he would have to be great. I think he gives a good performance, but I think he doesn't quite capture all the layers that one would want in the character of Tom Ripley, a character who's simultaneously calculating yet caught up in experiences, who's gleeful in his crimes and yet a bit remorseful. And while Damon is good in the film, he's not good enough to convey all of those things at the same time. In contrast, a lot of the people around him are extraordinarily good. Jude Law's wonderful as the rich millionaire. Cate Blanchett has a terrific turn as a more or less parallel figure to Tom Ripley, which is an American heiress who's over in Europe and feels kind of out of it. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, who seems to be in every single movie this year, has a terrific turn as a spoiled American named Freddie Miles. They're all really good in the film. In fact, they're better than Matt Damon and Gwyneth Paltrow, who plays the love interest in the film, and who's good, but once again caught in a role that really won't let her shine.
Now, there are two big bestsellers that have become holiday films, best-selling books, Angela's Ashes and Snow Falling on Cedars. Let's start with Angela's Ashes. First of all, did you like the book before it became a movie?
Yes. Well, actually, I have never read the book. It may be because I'm of Irish-American heritage, but somehow I feel as if I have that book in my bones already. I don't feel any need at all to read it. But seeing the film, I could tell that the book was much better than the film, because the best thing in the film is the narration, which clearly comes from the book. And what's rather bad and disappointing about the film is that it's a very cold and detached and prettified version of the Irish poverty that Angela's Ashes was all about. You know, it's a film that has, I think, five projectile vomiting sequences, and each and every one of them is beautifully lit.
Let's get to the second bestseller that's been made into a film for the holidays, and that's Snow Falling on Cedars. What's the story about?
The story is about an embittered young journalist, played by Ethan Hawke, who has virtually no ability as an actor, so far as I can discern, who years ago had lost his young love, a Japanese woman, and has been carrying the wounds of that ever since. And from this little mini love story, the film expands out to be a commentary on social justice and how Americans interned the Japanese in World War II. The novel was a very literary, internal affair. And in trying to capture this on screen, the filmmakers have just come up disastrously short. I mean, it may be the most inert single film of 1999. Every single shot is beautiful in a way that's not interesting. And yet, the overall effect is to make you feel as though you're somehow swimming in through a gift shop or something. There is nothing alive or energetic in the film at all. You simply can't believe that you could take a story that had won prizes as a literary thing and make something so dead. I mean, it's a genuinely terrible film.
Any guesses about why so many of the holiday movies are adaptations of novels or memoirs? We'll get to the memoir books. Well, actually, Angela's Ashes is a memoir.
Well, I think there are several reasons for the spate of adaptations at Christmas, and I think the big reason is that this is the time of the year when you're doing prestigious films. You're trying to win awards, and it's often thought here in Hollywood that something based on a book will be deeper or classier than something based on an original screenplay. I think this year is one of those examples that proves this isn't true at all, so that by far the most interesting movies of the year, something like Being John Malkovich, for instance, you know, is not an adaptation. It's something that somebody made up and seems much fresher than something rather tired like Angela's Ashes, which people not only feel as if they've read, even if they haven't read, but then gets watered down so that people who have read it will not like the film, thinking that the book's been betrayed.
My guest is our film critic, John Powers. We'll talk more about new holiday movies after a break. This is Fresh Air. Fresh Air's film critic John Powers is with us, and we're talking about some of the holiday movies. Well, let's get to another book that's been adapted into a movie, and that's Girl Interrupted. This is based on a memoir by Susanna Kaysen, as I recall, about her stay at mental hospitals.
Yes, it is. It's set in the 1960s, and it's about a young woman who's put in a mental hospital, or puts herself in the mental hospital under great duress. And the story, which stars Winona Ryder as Susanna, more or less follows her movement from thinking she might be a crazy person who's trying to kill herself through her development in the hospital to the point where she realizes she's ready to leave. The book, I'm told, is quite an angry book filled with very sharp political ideas about how young women in particular were thought to be crazy if they didn't want to fit the normal middle class trajectory of the 60s. A lot of that is missing from the book, or from the film, excuse me. But what the film does capture is that archetypal young woman's experience of thinking that maybe she's the only one in the world who's this way, and that the entire world is insane, and that maybe therefore that means she's actually insane, and therefore she's incredibly melancholy. Ryder is extraordinarily good in this role. It's probably the best acting she's ever done in her life. And she was responsible for getting the film put on screen, and I give her a lot of credit for it. When I'd heard about this film, I kind of groaned, because partly what happens at the holiday season is you get lots of stories about sob sister women. You know, they're either going crazy, or their families are dying, or they have cancer or something like this. And I thought this was going to be one of those films. But in fact, it's a very positive sort of film, because it's about a person who thinks they're insane learning how to make herself sane.
Okay, another movie based on a true story is Hurricane, based on Hurricane Carter's story. And tell us what the basic story is.
Well, the basic story is there was a boxer named Hurricane Carter who was falsely convicted of a couple of murders. Bob Dylan wrote a song about it that you might remember. And the story is about his life from early on till the point when he's finally set free, thanks to the help, to the intervention of a group of friendly Canadians who helped reopen his case. It's actually in many ways a remarkable story, and the shame is that somehow it's told in such a choppy and dull way that you never really get to know Hurricane Carter very well, even though he's wonderfully portrayed by Denzel Washington, and you never really get caught up in the story. My example of what's wrong with this film would be this, that Bob Dylan wrote this very famous song about Hurricane Carter, and for some reason the filmmakers take this inspirational song and stick it in about 20 minutes into the movie. And in some ways that's the most resounding, memorable moment of the film. Unfortunately, there are still 2 hours and 20 minutes left.
Mm. Well, Al Pacino, who's still playing in theaters in The Insider, has a new movie for the holidays, a football movie called On Any Given Sunday. It's also an Oliver Stone movie. Is there a conspiracy going on here in this football movie?
Well, is it ever an Oliver Stone movie? Let me tell you. This is Oliver Stone's film about the NFL. And I must admit that even though many people who I saw it with really didn't like the film, I had an incredibly good time watching it, because Stone is such a wild and energetic and want-to-please-you style director that I thought, even though it was 2.5 hours, I enjoyed almost every minute of it. The story is a rather basic one. It's about an honorable old coach, played by Pacino, who's trying to cope with the changes in the new NFL. So there's an owner who's really more concerned about money than about football. She's played by Cameron Diaz. And then there's the rising young African-American quarterback who won't listen to instructions, who he just can't relate to, because the young African-American athletes no longer can relate to these weird old white guys. And you get this entire built-up story that, and what interests me about the film is that I think it's not actually about football. It's actually Oliver Stone's version of his own experience in Hollywood. I think the whole thing's a massive allegory in which he is the Pacino character who's been around for a long time, has won championships, that is to say Oscars, and is trying to do good work. But they're all the greedy younger people above him who don't care about the work anymore. And below, there are all the greedy, pushy young stars who won't listen to you. And so the whole film, I think, can be read as Oliver Stone's commentary, not just on football, but on the movie business.
Interesting. And how's Pacino? Is he good, or is he chewing the scenery?
Well, it's actually, Al seems to be doing essentially the same performance he did in The Insider. At the time that The Insider first played, people were saying, oh, Al's pretty good, he might get an Oscar nomination. And then when they came out of Any Given Sunday, people kept saying, huh, he seems to be giving exactly the same performance in both films. I guess neither is very good. In fact, Pacino, even when he's chewing the scenery, is usually fun to watch. And here he's a lot of fun to watch. I mean, almost everyone's good. James Woods has a nasty little part. Cameron Diaz, you know, once again proves that she may be the great sport of American actresses. She has a scene where she walks into a locker room and shakes hand with a completely naked athlete that I think most people will enjoy seeing.
I'm with Fresh Air's film critic John Powers, and we're talking about some of the new movies that have opened for the holidays, or that are opening for the holidays. Jodie Foster has opened in a new movie called Anna and the King that's based on the same story that The King and I is based on, the famous musical. How is this?
Well, it's actually not very good, to be honest. I hate to keep saying that these holiday films aren't very good, but frankly, most of them just aren't very good. This is a very, very familiar story about Anna, the English governess who deals with the King of Siam. And this film really adds nothing to what we know of that story. This is not a story that needed to be told yet one more time.
Plus, no songs.
Plus, no songs. What's interesting about it is that there's an enormous clash of acting styles between the star and everyone else in the film, which is to say that this film, which was directed by Andy Tennant, who last made Ever After, a Drew Barrymore film, is a film that is content to skim over the surface of life. It wants to charm you, show you lovely scenery, and more or less carry you along with an old kind of epic sweep. And most of the performers in the film seem to realize this. Chow Yun-fat, who plays the king, is wonderfully good as the king. In fact, this may be his star-making role in America. He's charismatic, funny, charming. He seems manly in a way that everyone, I think, like men to be. The problem is that Jodie Foster seems to think she's in a John Cassavetes movie or something. So she goes through this movie where everyone else is swanning along, looking neurotic, haggard, miserable, breaking into tears. It's as though no one told her that this was supposed to be a Hollywood, old-fashioned, happy, rompy, big Christmas film. So she's doing a serious, overly serious, in fact, dramatic performance in a film that simply doesn't call for it. And so the film is incredibly skewed. I know when I walked out of the theater, people kept saying, what's happened to Jodie? You know, it's almost as though she's somehow gotten so disconnected from the film she's in that she wasn't aware that she was acting in a movie that everybody, she wasn't acting in the same movie that everybody else was in.
John, are there any holiday movies that we didn't get to that you want to mention? Or any that you want to just mention and save for later review?
Yes. Well, there are a couple of films that should be mentioned. One is Topsy Turvy, the Mike Leigh film about Gilbert and Sullivan, which has won the New York Film Critics Award as best film. I didn't love the film, but it's a good film. And, you know, by comparison with lots of the other holiday films, it really looks like a great film. So I would urge people to see that. It has a really terrific performance by Jim Broadbent, who is an actor people will know from other Mike Leigh films, such as Life is Sweet. The other film I would want to mention is Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia. Anderson last made Boogie Nights, a film I liked quite a lot, and I was really looking forward to this one. I don't think it's a successful film. I think it's something of a mess, but it is, in lots of ways, an inspired mess, which is to say that he has so much more talent than so many of the people making films that even when he's making a film I don't like, I think that I'm watching something by a real filmmaker who's filling the screen with lots of good stuff. There's probably too much stuff in this film. I'll review the film when it comes out, but I do think that if it's playing in your area, you might want to give it a look. Because when I first saw it months and months ago, I didn't think it was great. Then after seeing all the other things that have come out since, it's been looking better and better to me.
Well, one more thing. If you want to catch up on films that you've missed that are still in the theaters, you know, but have already opened, is there one you'd recommend?
Well, I think that really, you know, if I were recommending films that I would think people should try to see before the year ends, I think they should try to see All About My Mother and Being John Malkovich. Mm-hmm. I think All About My Mother is the most enjoyable foreign language film of the year by a lot. And Being John Malkovich is probably the most inventive American movie of the year. And I think they're both just sheerly pleasurable films. And I think they're in lots of theaters, and I would recommend people go see them.
Well, John, I look forward to talking with you next week about the films that have made your list for best movies of the year.
Okay, thank you.
I wish you happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Thank you very much for being with us. John Powers is film critic for Fresh Air and Vogue magazine. Next Friday, he'll be back to present his list of the 10 best films of the year. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.